choreography among them. We don't have that luxury. Even if there's no set date for a ballet's premiere, I still have to work around the dancers' schedules, and the composers, and the set designers, and the lighting directors, and the theaters, too. I still have those dancers coming to the studio as scheduled, expecting something wonderful from me. That responsibility weighs on me, and when it's compounded by multiple projects, it can be crushing. I maintain control of the process by envisioning all of my projects as circles within circles on a piece of paper, with their deadline scrawled within the borders of each. Each circle is a self-contained unit, separate, distinct, isolated, like the popular Russian nesting dolls. But each rubs up against and enfolds the other circles, too. After all, if I'm working on several things at once, they inevitably compete with one another. They clamor not only for my time, but for my undivided attention. If I follow my circles and match things up with my calendar, the progression begins to make sense. I look at the concentric circles and tell myself, I can do this. This routine bolsters my faith in myself, which instills confidence, which provides momentum. Most creative endeavors don't allow precise planning, but it's still vital to have some sense of how long something is going to take you. One successful commercial writer advises people beginning their first novels to allow a year to create a first draft, writing a page a day, and another year to make it good. At first glance, the thought of investing 2 years in a project is daunting, but a page a day is a manageable output. Also, it's nice to know you're accumulating a first draft. You'll get to fix it later. Think of all the things you want to accomplish in the next few months. How much do they overlap? Do they conflict? Draw your own circles. Make the circles big or little depending on the importance of the task. Use this method for prioritizing your time. Any approach that renews your self-confidence and keeps you moving forward is worth cultivating and repeating. 26. Take away a skill. Take away a skill, a vital one. Would you still be able to create? How would you overcome the loss? How would you compensate? What skill would come to the fore to rescue your work? Business executives run through this type of hypothetical exercise all the time as a way to establish their organization's strengths and preparedness. They're always imagining what-if scenarios in which the company loses something. For example, what if we lost Executive X to the competition? What would happen to his clients and customers? Would they stay with us or go with him? What are we prepared to do about that? These are useful because they reveal the powers the company has in reserve. It raises the question, of course, as to why these capabilities have been held back in the first place. But that's the value of thinking hypothetically. It unleashes new talents. It also forces you to face reality. Jack Welch, when he became CEO of General Electric, had one of his first meetings with the people who ran the company's nuclear reactor business. The executives were forecasting growth in the division based on sales of 3 or 4 very expensive nuclear reactors a year. Welch didn't see it that way. Politicians and citizens were losing their enthusiasm for nuclear power. Demand for more plants was vanishing. He told his executives, "You're not facing reality. You're running this business as if you have customers for your reactors. You don't. The customers don't exist." He forced them to come up with a plan for a business that doesn't build and sell new reactors, but rather services the ones they had already built and sold. He forced them to create a new service business that dealt with the facts as they were, not as they wanted them to be. That's valuable thinking. take away new customers. What have you got left? This happened to me, not hypothetically, when I broke my ankle working on the Milos Forman film of Hair. It was the first time in my life that I had lost my mobility. The first time that I would have to create dance in some manner other than on my body. It was the first time that I wouldn't be able to show the dancers what I wanted, but rather would have to tell them. That's a huge difference for a choreographer. I managed to get through it. For 8 weeks, I went into the studio and forced myself to visualize what I wanted and then translate it into language that the dancers would understand. I didn't enjoy it, but I discovered two new skills. One, I could verbalize my ideas better than I thought I could. Two, I had a talent for refusing to be defeated by reality. In this regard, my heroes are those who've prevailed over far greater losses than I've ever had to face. Henri Matisse was bedridden in his home in the south of France, with only the use of his arms and imagination in his final years. But he wasn't going to stop working. His mind wouldn't rest, so he came up with a new way of working. Paper cutouts. These exquisitely pure creations out of the most childlike material are some of my favorite works by Matisse. They are the essence of his art. I doubt he would have ever made them if some of his other skills had not been taken away. Alicia Alonso, the great Cuban dancer, was blind for much of her career, but she still performed well into her 70s. The age is just as remarkable as the lack of sight. She could always tell where she was on stage by feeling the heat from the stage lights. The giant in this category, of course, is Beethoven, who composed many of his greatest works after he lost his hearing. Freed from the distractions of the new, he reconnected with the ideas and themes that had moved him in his youth, to mine the richness of his classical heritage. We can take great inspiration from this. Pick one of your skills from the list you made in Take Inventory of Your Skills. Now remove it. What's left? What can you accomplish without it? What does it say about your work habits, your art, your potential? And if you can do without it, why haven't you?